This is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. On today's roundtable, Iraq, Year 5, is officially underway. Another suspect held in Guantanamo Bay confesses to crimes against the U.S., and New York police officers are indicted in the shooting of a groom on his wedding day. Joining us on our panel are Michael Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, Chicago Sun-Times columnist Laura Washington, and Bob Meadow, staff writer with People Magazine. Hello, everybody. Nice to have you.
Yes.
Hey, Tony.
Thank you.
Well, let's start here. It's been 4 years since the U.S. and allies waged war in Iraq, but since that time, the war itself has gotten less and less popular, and not just here. Polls showing support for the war continuing to drop, but the government, our government, remains slightly more optimistic. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice spoke on ABC's Good Morning America.
We've achieved a great deal with the Iraqis, but there's still much more to do. And of course, one is always thinks about the tremendous sacrifice, the men and women who have been lost in this war, and the innocent Iraqis who have died. But we also have to remember the 12.5 million people who voted, Iraqis who voted for a new government and a new life, and I think the new possibilities that are opened up by the Baghdad security plan, which thus far is well on the way.
So, Michael Myers, let's start with you. How does this play into the chess match between President Bush and the democratically controlled Congress? For example, let's take the House spending bill, $124 billion, $95 billion of it for the war. That bill seems headed for a certain veto if it gets to the president's desk, which is no guarantee because the Dems want to tie troop withdrawal to the money. So, ultimately, what kind of war spending bill do you think is likely to prevail in this climate?
I think the president will prevail in this climate, right, as he has been prevailing in the climate, because no one is taking him on the constitutional challenge of stopping the war. The President Bush has declared that we will continue to fight, and the Congress says that they will continue to fight with President Bush over his war of aggression. So the war rages on. You know, Bill Maher, I was listening to his show last night, and he made a play on the British scholars Edmund Burke's adage about all that is required for evil to triumph. He said, they say that evil happens when good men do nothing. Well, the Democrats prove it also happens when mediocre people do nothing. These Democrats are doing nothing. Meanwhile, we meaning the American soldiers, are policing a civil war. The USA Patriot Act is turning our government against our citizens, violating our civil liberties, reading our mail, listening to our phone calls. And the sacrifice is more than just a loss of life. But people are losing limbs and psychological and other kinds of damage. This is a terrible situation, and we don't have a sufficient number in the Congress, Democrat and Republican, to say end the war and end it now.
Do you share that view, Laura Washington?
Of course. I think, Michael, you say that the Democrats are mediocre. And, well, I think in many ways the Republicans, and I'm not talking about the Bush administration, but his, you know, the folks who want to be the next Bush are as mediocre, if not more so, because they have so much more to lose in this ongoing dragged out political debate about when to end the war. All the major Republican presidential wannabes won't draw the line in the sand as the Democrats want, and won't say we have to end this war now. Those folks are in far more danger because they're being perceived as people who many of them, like John McCain, who have been proponents of the war from the very beginning, perceived as people who don't know when to get out. The issue of death and destruction is being felt more by the Iraqis, and the Iraqis want us out more than anybody else. There was a USA Today poll that just came out in the last few days that showed that 6 in 10 Iraqis say that their lives are going badly. And if you look at the Sunni population, that they say that universally. And so there's no win here. There's no way of winning this war. It's a political solution that we need here, and the political solution is to get out now.
Well, let me ask you, Bob Meadows. In fact, before I do, let me go back to something that Laura just said because about the polls. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the BBC and ABC also did a poll of Iraqis, and that poll said, you're right, that most of the people who are in Iraq are saying that their lives are terrible and that they are afraid for their safety. But at the same time, this was also said in that poll. Only 35% of the Iraqis polled said that they wanted the troops to leave right now. So my question to you, Bob Meadows, is why is it that if the war is so unpopular, it doesn't appear to be an agreement over how and when the troops should be brought out?
Well, the reason there's no agreement is because you have more than one person making this decision. Anytime you have more than that, you're probably going to have a disagreement. I'm thinking to myself, as Condoleezza Rice said, 12.5 million Iraqis voted for a better life. This isn't the life that they voted for. That similar poll, 18% of the Iraqis have no confidence in our troops. They don't think that they can protect them. They may not want the troops to leave because they feel if they do, well, then, you know, all hell is going to break loose,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems to us from America reading about this that all hell is already broken loose. So what's the difference? But perhaps maybe if you're actually over there, you do notice where when the troops come in, the thugs leave. Maybe that's what's going on over there, and I have read accounts of that as well. So to them, perhaps, sure, they want the troops to stay. What they don't want, though, is they don't want the troops governing them. That's right. What they don't want, and that's what's going on.
Credibility certainly is one of the issues here. The White House call for patience comes amid a great deal of controversy and conflict swirling around the administration, from the Libby trial to the U.S. attorney firings and so on, just to name a couple. Now, Guantanamo is back in the headlines. Another detainee says he was abused by the U.S. Also yesterday, another detainee says that he confessed to planning the 2000 attack against the USS Cole. Of course, 17 sailors were killed in that attack, 37 injured when suicide bombers plowed their boat containing explosives into the missile destroyer. Now, the Pentagon officials are saying that he made this confession during a hearing at Guantanamo Bay. So there's an awful lot to digest. My question to you, I'll start with you, Laura, is do we know how the government is getting this information, and what's credible and what's not?
Well, Tony, you hit the nail right on the head. We know we don't know. When we get information like this, it's very vague. It's not well documented. It's basically the government released a transcript of this so-called confession. Even the tone of the language in what they released sounds very stilted, sounds very coached, sounds very rehearsed. And you don't know what the context of this confession was. You don't know when this confession happened. And I think the timing is very, very important here, because they've been holding some of these men at Guantanamo for, you know, 5-6 years. And all of a sudden, now, as you point out, when the Bush administration is in the worst crisis it's been in its tenure, we get these so-called confessions. I think it's a lot of spin, and I don't think it answers the question. The major question is, what good is this going to do us to know this information now? What good is it going to do us to know who plotted these long ago terrorist attacks? What information are they gathering? What quote unquote intelligence are they gathering from these prisoners that's going to help us prevent the disaster the Bush administration keeps warning us is afoot if we get out of Iraq?
So, Michael Myers, do you think so much credibility has been lost that people don't know what to believe?
Absolutely. I don't know what to believe anymore. But, you know, I must tell you that I wish I could believe my government. That's a wish.
That would be nice.
Based on experience, recent experience, I cannot believe almost anything. I can't believe what Alberto Gonzalez says, because every time someone says something, then something else surfaces. So there's a lot of context here that they don't tell us what they don't think we need to know. And they tell us bits and pieces. And some of the bits and pieces they tell us are outright lies and fabrications. Mm. So you have Waleed Mohammed bin Attash in this context of enemy combatant status hearing against the framework of no independent observers allowed to watch the hearings, to be present, and against the rumor mill of torture. Mm. So how reliable can this confession be, the average, ordinary, naive citizen must ask? And plus you have the overlay of some of these people are just braggarts, and they have this martyr complex. So they may be confessing things they haven't even done.
Well, we're going to move on to another topic, but before we do, in case you are just joining us, this is NPR's News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox, and we are on today's roundtable. Joining me, Michael Myers, who you just heard, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist, and Bob Meadows, staff writer with People Magazine. Let's go to the Big Apple, folks. Speaking of abuse, 3 New York City police officers indicted in the shooting of a groom on his wedding day. surrendered to police yesterday. They were accused, of course, of firing close to 50 shots at three unarmed men in a car outside a nightclub. Two of the officers have been charged with manslaughter, and a third officer is charged with a misdemeanor called reckless endangerment. Now, two other officers involved were not indicted. Sean Bell, of course, was killed, two of his friends seriously injured, and police union president Michael Palladino, I think I'm saying his name right, says the main concern is that the officers receive fair treatment. Here he is.
In order for the detectives to get a level playing field and a fair trial, the case has to take place in the courtroom, not in the court of public opinion.
Now, that didn't stop Reverend Al Sharpton from voicing the concern of Sean Bell's family in the media. Now, you may have a hard time hearing this, so listen closely. This is Sharpton.
The facts is three unarmed men were shot at 50 times. One man is dead because of it, whose two children are here with their mother and his wife. And the other two survived to tell the story. So whoever they get last minute or early will have to explain how unarmed men being shot at one kill is not a crime in New York.
Let's start with this, Bob Meadows. What's the mood of New York City over this? Is it split?
It's always split here. You have people, of course, who support the police. They understand that the police officers here, as well as around the country, have very dangerous jobs. You also have people who understand that unarmed people, let alone unarmed black men, should not have to be shot and should not just die in the street like that. It's you've had rallies, definitely. You had rallies the other day. I think that with these indictments, the indictments are a good thing. That's another step along the way. But, of course, there have been many police officers who have been indicted but did not get convicted or got a slap on the wrist. The two officers they face first-degree, second-degree manslaughter. First-degree manslaughter can get them 25 years in jail. But we want to see the trial. We want to see them. And one thing that I did hear was that they weren't charged with murder because they feel that, 7 years ago with the Amadou Diallo case, that because those officers were charged with murder, the jury didn't want to convict them of something so serious. So perhaps manslaughter is seen as an agreement of sorts, compromise.
A convictable.
Tony, I must tell you that it's never a hard time hearing Al Sharpton. I listened to his live press conference yesterday and his slip of the tongue when he said that all five officers should have been shot. He meant should have been indicted. But, you know, the grand jury is a secret, closed proceeding. Al Sharpton didn't hear over 100 witnesses. He was not there. All five officers testified voluntarily before the grand jury. The law was instructed as to the grand jurors were instructed as to the law by the district attorney, who was Richard Brown, who was a representative of Richard Brown. The district attorney happens to be a former appellate judge in New York and respected by the law enforcement community. He knows the law. So I think the representative of the detectives union is correct. The action now goes to the courthouse, and that's where the legal presumption of innocence must attach. This is basic civil rights, constitutional rights of any suspect and any defendant.
Now, you mentioned an interesting thing. You talk about the presumption of innocence. The legal presumption of innocence. Since both of you, Bob and Mike Myers, are in New York City, is there a discernible media spin inside New York with regard to the coverage of this story?
Absolutely. I saw the media yesterday going off with opinions about change of venue, stoking up people's passions and prejudices, and saying, you know, what Bob said, you know, the murder wasn't charged because of the Diallo situation. The Diallo situation and this situation are two different things. Again, the facts or circumstances of this particular case went to a grand jury, and the DA instructed that grand jury as to the law. Now, the bigger picture is the question of police-community relations. I mean, why are the police undercover in our nightclubs? Why are there so 500,000 stop and frisk, mostly of black young people in New York, black and Hispanic people? What? Why this aggressive policing, which includes improper move on orders? Whenever black people stand around, they have to move on and move away.
Let's get Bob in. Bob, what's your take on the discernible spin in the city? Do you agree with the with what Mike Myers is saying?
Well, you know, to a degree.
You can say no.
It's not that I don't agree. It's that I don't really expect anything else from the New York media. It's highly competitive. You know, it's just like TV news all around the country. I guess I'm just going to focus on the newspapers. The Daily News and New York Post, in particular, are very supportive of the police. But the New York Post is especially. They're very right wing. They're very, gung-ho for the cops.
They weren't supportive of Michael Oliver when they exposed him for a $4,000 bill in his restaurant charge.
And how could they be? He shot 31 times, but he's also the white officer in this. They're really laying off the black officer so much, and I think you definitely see that.
Here's my final thing. We've got less than a minute. Do either of you, and Laura Washington, my apologies to you for not bringing you in on this.
Yeah, but I'd like to get a little word in before you go.
All right, then go ahead.
Well, I just think that what this really is going to come down to is the jury deliberations, wherever they end up, if they end up in New York or in Albany. And it gets back to what Bob said about the ongoing racial and economic divide in the way this country looks at police. If that jury is made up of middle class, economically comfortable people who don't have negative experiences with police, there's going to be a more sympathy for the police officers than there is if there are poor people in the jury. And as you know, poor people tend not to be on juries. I don't know what's going to happen in New York, but I think that that's going to be a real key issue there.
All right, we got to get out of here, but really quickly, yes or no, will there be a change of venue? Yes or no, Mike Myers?
No.
Bob Meadows.
I hope not.
I don't think there's been that much prejudicial publicity.
We've got to run. Mike Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. Bob Meadows, Staff Writer with People Magazine, both at our New York Bureau. Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist at our Chicago Bureau. Everybody, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.